Welcome to the Tackling the Opioid Epidemic with the Prescription Playbook, a conversation about empowering and educating communities to prevent overdoses to end the opioid crisis. My name is Armando Miranda, and I am a prevention specialist with the Prescription Playbook, and I will be your host today. Excited to welcome our guest, Ron Sprong, from the Greene County Public Health Department. How are you doing today, Ron?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, thank you for being here. Why don't we get started? Why don't you talk a little bit about the work that you do out in Greene County?
Yeah, so like you said, my name is Ron Sprong. I'm the community health manager here at the Greene County Health Department. And community health is a very broad term, but more specifically, me and my team, we are responsible for health education, community outreach, partnership, collaboration, and engagement. And a big part of our work centers around building supports for mental health and substance use recovery.
That is absolutely awesome. Ron, I guess I can give a little bit of context about how we kind of met or initially made the connection. I am kind of new to the area in the sense of getting to know people working in prevention efforts and in substance misuse prevention efforts. And it's been a pleasure to work with you. It's so awesome to hear about the work that you do. And it's so necessary in today's day and age. And I want to begin by just, prefacing this a little bit. So what is your overall experience been like working in prevention? Maybe how did you get started? How did you find yourself working in the field?
Well, public health wasn't ever really a part of my long-term vision. In 2020, during all the chaos of the world at that time, I actually had an opportunity to come here to the health department to help in our community's COVID-19 response efforts. And about a year later, we started our Illinois Project for the Local Assessment of Need, which is the iPlan, as we call it. And what that is it's a survey of our community that works to identify the needs within our community. It kind of sets the direction for our work here at the health department. During those surveys, those focus groups, those listening sessions, it was a really common theme. I wouldn't say that we specifically learned anything new because we knew what the challenges were, but it was interesting to hear the feedback from our partners, community residents, around prevention. And more specifically, with substance use and mental health prevention. And that's when I really started developing a passion for public health. Mm-hmm. As that work continued, it kind of grew into the modern day community health division. And prevention, you know, it really is a multifaceted approach. That work aims to reduce the risk of disease transmission and promote overall health and well-being within our communities, but that can have so many different forms, from implementing measures such as vaccine communications, promoting healthy behaviors like regular hand washing, or just conducting health education to raise awareness about prevention strategies. You know, there's so many components to community health, and At its core, it's building a community around prevention, basically, I guess is what I'm trying to say. You know, by focusing on prevention, our communities can reduce the burdens of illness and it really improve the quality of life for so many, ultimately saving lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's so insightful to hear. A lot of people working in the prevention field also kind of jumped into the deep end during that time of COVID. I know I can only kind of speak for myself and my experience, but that's kind of where I learned what prevention was and seeing it in action. And even today, I think we learned a lot about how we can kind of build community to get the right information out there and to get community involvement, right? And I think at that time, you know, at the beginning of the COVID pandemic, we saw, public health and just the verbiage of public health and community collaboration was at the forefront of everybody's mind because everybody was at home. We were all going through the same experiences. So thinking about how we can use it today and use what we learned today is just, I think, unfortunately, it's one of the things that came out of that experience. So to talk a little bit more about, or I guess to kind of add on, where have you found like specific success in your efforts now that you've been working in the field? And if and where do you believe that you need structural, that's like state, federal, or local government to support, you know, leading your efforts moving forward?
You know, kind of piggybacking on what you just said there, community. By actively involving local community members, whether that be partners, organizations, human service providers, involving them in the decision-making processes, and then utilizing that information to tailor our messaging, it helps resonate with local cultural norms and values that we have here in our community. All communities are different. You know, we've been able to foster trust and promote adherence to preventative measures through many different channels because we're working to build that trust using the feedback from the community. Additionally, our partners and local organizations, they've been instrumental in helping us reach underserved populations across our community, which really helps address specific needs in underserved communities or regions within sub-regions, right? And then looking at future sustainability, I'd say one of the biggest things that we need is just more investment in overall community health, in that population health interventions. That's really where I feel like we could make the most progress and in public health. But it's a area that I think we've learned, like you said earlier, from the pandemic, that we were underfunded, under-resourced for a very long time. But as we move forward, it's going to be really important that we continue investing specifically in population level health education, prevention work, to ensure that this work continues. Because I think we've done a good job at getting ourselves back on track and building that capacity to deliver those services. But what does the sustainability look like?
Yeah, no, I think at the forefront of a lot of people working in this field, it's definitely the sustainability aspect, right? How do we bring this information? How do we present this information? And how do we make this information succeed in, you know, in perpetuity, right? How, and I think sometimes I think of my role is almost being on one end of, you know, one end of the telephone, like in that, you know, in that schoolyard game, right? I'm passing along certain information, and how can I make it so that this information is disseminated in a way that feels authentic to the people living in this community who might have historical or societal reasons for maybe not always entrusting information coming from a place of federal or I guess like governmental authority? And how do we kind of present it in a way that it feels like natural to have it in conversation and to kind of foster that relationship with community members? And so, yeah, that I think it is at the forefront of all of our minds, and to think of a way to do it so that we have, and I think that's what goes back to that aspect, right? It's having collaboration with community members. It's having those conversations with stakeholders, because I think they know their people better than anybody, right? And so I think it's just it's always an opportunity. I view it as that, not so much as a barrier all the time to get integrated and to have conversations, but as an opportunity to help spread kind of this information that we think would be beneficial, but it has to happen in collaboration. I can't think one thing about, you know, us having a conversation beforehand, because of the way I present certain information might not resonate with community members. So that definitely, that really resonated with me. And I appreciate that, Ron. Yeah, so I'm kind of interested now. What has been like the most beneficial way for you to kind of foster those relationships with community members? What has it been, receiving feedback through surveys? Is it meeting them where they are? Is it hosting community events? You know, what has really worked for you?
I feel like, you know, we've seen a systematic shift in that community members are getting involved in the prevention work and community health more broadly. Community engagement, it become increasingly recognized that the it is the cornerstone of public health interventions, which leads to more inclusive and collaborative approaches to addressing health challenges in our communities. One of the notable changes is the heightened sense of community solidarity that we've seen, and that collective responsibility that's emerged since the pandemic. Community members have demonstrated a great willingness to adhere to public health guidelines during some of the craziest times of our lives, right? And over time, we had to build that trust, and a lot of that goes back into the work that health departments have been doing for a long time. But it wasn't until the light was shined on public health that people started noticing. So there's been this like widespread recognition of the importance of individual action when it comes to safeguarding community health. Moreover, I think that community members, they being involved in or more involved in prevention also gets people to be advocating for their own health needs. It kind of empowers them. It puts the tools into their arsenal, if you'd say. This participation can go at many different levels, whether they're that's educating family, educating people in their where they work, where they worship, that message, kind of going back on what that message spreads and people become advocates of the prevention messaging. We've also seen an acceleration of digital technologies that facilitate community engagement and communication. And I think that by leveraging that and tapping into that as a result of the pandemic, that's furthered our ability to reach populations that are, historically underserved, under marginalized rural communities. Much of Illinois is a rural community, but that tapping into that digital technology has really helped advance the prevention field. Overall, I think that these changes, they really reflect a shift towards a more participatory kind of community-centered approach to public health. I think the community members are taking an ever-increasing active role in prevention. And, this role not only strengthens the effectiveness of our intervention, some of which have been around for a long time, but also fosters that sense of empowerment and resilience within our community that we need to address future health challenges, really. And that, I think, is at the core of prevention.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that what we've seen, during the opioid epidemic that we're currently living in, in the short time that I've worked as a prevention specialist, I think I have started to see minds shift quickly, just because of how large the issue is and how it is at the forefront of American society. It's on everybody's mind. And I think that what surprised me just about how we've talked about substance misuse in this country for such a long time and the criminalization of substance misuse is that I've seen an overwhelming effort for people who didn't know or who were misinformed about the opioid epidemic, how open they are to having that conversation because of the misinformation that exists. And then being more open to to find out about those harm reduction efforts. I think for me, that's I think been the most like eye-opening. Initially, I think if you would have asked me before I started this work, or maybe coming straight out of my graduate program, I maybe would have been a little bit disillusioned as to how people would want to have a conversation about harm reduction efforts. But what I've seen is an over, I guess maybe like a resounding amount of people wanting to talk about what Narcan is, wanting to know how to tell the signs, interested in learning about where they can safely dispose of prescription medications, and use fentanyl test kits. And that's just from a community stakeholder perspective. I think people are kind of yearning for the right information. And I think that people don't want to see their community members, their neighbors, their family members, suffer. I hope that what we're seeing at a grassroots level from community members who are, heavily involved is that we're able to see that on a larger scale. And I do believe that in the state of Illinois, we are making strides to you know, inform the public. And I'm speaking specifically about the state basically passing that bill, making it so that fentanyl education is going to be a requirement in education to high school students during their health courses. And for me, that's a win. You know, we have to kind of meet these individuals where they are. And I think one of the best places to do that is, you know, to meet students in their classroom. And they are, like you said, the ones using technology and being advocates. But yeah.
I completely agree. I think, you know, we, out of the pandemic, there was a lot that was wrong, right, during the pandemic, but it really helped us shed light on individual pieces. And I think out of that, that community solidarity that has emerged as a result of that period of really isolation in our lives, it's been phenomenal. And you see that shift across the nation, you know, especially with regards to substance use. You know, there's a shift in minds and hearts. And a lot of that is largely due to the work of people like you, people like my team, you know, that centers their work on changing those hearts and minds, and not just changing them, but educating them, you know, moving them along in the process, empowering them to use that, expand that knowledge centered around these very real and pressing public health issues.
No, yeah, absolutely. And I think that I'm now kind of, and I don't want to get caught up in kind of the semantics or the in a tangent. Yeah, no, in the work that we do, you know, constantly thinking about new ways to help spread information, new avenues to collaborate and make and have conversations that are going to put us in the right place to help spread the word. And I think sometimes that's easier said than done. But yeah, more than anything, yeah, that's why I thought you'd be a great guest for this podcast, and just wanted to applaud your efforts that you all have done in your community to kind of, you know, bring this conversation to the forefront. And in a time where it can be extremely divisive, something like the opioid epidemic and varying amounts of solutions being thrown out there, I think that's where public and community health and prevention specialists and practitioners, yeah, we need to be kind of supported and find ways and avenues to collaborate to bring the information forward. Yeah, so moving on to one of the other questions I have here, I know we've already kind of discussed it a little bit, but I was wondering if you could go in a little bit more detail about how you have seen changes in the way that community members are involved in prevention and treatment efforts on your end in your community. And if that's not something you've seen, you know, what other avenues of collaboration would you like to see with community stakeholders to make them aware, or at least, you know, agents of change?
Yeah, so, you know, when we were conducting our iPlan planning process and we identified our four priorities in our community, you know, mental health, substance use, food access, and recreational activities were our four priority areas. And to address two more of the major issues, mental health and substance use, we dove into that even deeper. We started collecting data, not just on what was going on around those specific issues, but how can we fix them as a community? And, you know, out of that brought community engagement to the very forefront. That is the, you know, the changes that we've seen. You know, people want to, they don't just want to be seen, they want to be heard. Mm-hmm. And they want their voices and their opinions and their knowledge to be known. Mm-hmm. And they want people to do something about it. And that was something that we really, you know, that was a kind of a pivot moment for us. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where we started like really taking that information and turning it into actionable change. Mm-hmm. And we brought the community together. And that togetherness, that social connection empowers, it liberates like the community to, mm-hmm. you know, collectively forward in addressing these very challenges. So mm-hmm. I really think that, you know, that sense of solidarity, that collective responsibility, mm-hmm. I think, you know, that empowered people to be involved in the process, mm-hmm. to begin advocating to begin expanding that knowledge around prevention and the ways that we can be involved in this work and move forward as a community. So I really think that that's one of the things that we've seen change since the pandemic, because pre-pandemic, yes, we worked together, but I do not think that we work together in the levels that we do post-pandemic.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of seeing a theme throughout our conversation. Just it is one of the I guess consequences, you know, I would just say, or outcomes of the initial pandemic, is that, just to kind of reiterate what you were saying, it's just the way that we have learned to communicate with each other. And I can think of how, you know, my experience in the Latino community has, in my perspective, has changed a lot since the pandemic, and the way that we have a sense of community, how we kind of build community. You know, I think I've always resonated with people from a similar heritage of me, because we often have, you know, some level of like, we come from the same diaspora, right? So we feel a connection through our culture and our heritage. And I think after the pandemic, my mind has also started to think about how we are now not only bound by culture and heritage, but a collective experience. And I think that that's something that cities and communities and towns and schools have just strongly developed. You know, we are in a place now where I really do think that people have opened up the conversation about mental health and the need for more resources to be poured into mental health resources. And likewise, you know, in the face of this opioid epidemic, we are seeing a desperate need for more mental health resources and for community involvement. And it's been really great to see that that's been one of the positive consequences of the COVID pandemic, is that it is at the forefront of the mind, and everybody now has an idea of shared accountability. And I think that if that's one of the things that can come out of it, and one of the positives that can come out from the initial pandemic that we went through, it is that. Right. It is that sense, is that sense of accountability that we all individually have, not only to ourselves, but to our immediate community. Just like how I wouldn't go out sick, you know, or I would wear a mask to protect the members of my community. Likewise, I see now that people want to have conversations, and people want to protect the people who are, you know, their neighbors. You know, people are more open to having that conversation about mental health. And I think it's a direct relation to the work that we do now. Yeah, that's really great, Ron. I appreciate, you know, everything you've had to say so far, and I think we've had a really great conversation. I want to give you the opportunity to talk about any upcoming events that you have planned in Greene County, or vice versa, in Scott County as well. Is there anything that you would like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, our ROSC meeting, our Recovery Oriented System of Care meeting, is held third Tuesday of every month at 3 p.m. To get the link, you simply go to greencountyhd.org/recovery, and that's green with an E. Mm-hmm. And you can join the meeting, join in on the movement, because it really is a grassroots initiative, which is a vital piece of mobilizing those resources, disseminating that information. We're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And the only way to solve these crises is together.
Yeah, and I also encourage everybody who's listening to help spread the word. If you don't feel like you've ever connected to the ROSC in your county or in your community, I highly recommend that you seek it out. They do some great work, and it is the grassroots efforts that we all need to contribute to help end the opioid epidemic. So we appreciate you joining us in the fight to end the opioid epidemic. For more information on how we can work together to raise awareness on the epidemic and end it once and for all, you can find us at ilhpp.org/prescription-playbook. As well as on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Ron, again, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.